Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 115 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
So Summer and I love to do the read-alongs. We love to travel and go to Scotland, talk about our trips, and go to Comic-Con and do events that we're able to go to. But there's something about connecting via interview with people, with the movers and shakers, whether they're part of production or tangentially related in some way, or just part of the artistic world in some way created or affiliated with Outlander. And that is someone we have today to interview. Allison Ourcade with Rock Love Jewelry is one of those artistic movers and shakers. And she is, to our great joy, affiliated with Outlander. And so first, let's welcome Allison to the Outlander podcast. Allison, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to talk to you guys because I haven't really gotten a chance to do any kind of official announcements yet for the new release of the Outlander jewelry on the outlanderstore.com. So thank you for having me.
Oh, anytime and always. We are always happy to speak with people who love the books, who love the story, and who are bringing such wonderful art to fans to help us further love the books and have things in our lives that remind us of the books and the story of Jamie and Claire, especially during this huge long thing called Droughtlander.
Droughtlander. Oh, so true. It just means that we have to drink scotch and watch episodes over and over again ad nauseum
while wearing a certain necklace or a certain ring, right? We got to go there too. Okay, so how did you get started designing jewelry? How did you get to where you are now? And where have you studied and with whom?
So I never really intended to be a jewelry designer. When I was a kid, I actually played violin very seriously and went to conservatory and really thought that I was going to be a professional violinist. And in college, I'd always made jewelry for myself and for family members. Was very crafty, starting from a little kid. All the like bead looms and Lisa Frank beads and bedazzlers that probably should never have happened. And there's probably a few denim jackets that I'm going to regret someday. But then in college, I did a study abroad program in Florence, Italy, and that's where I did an apprenticeship and learned old world style of making jewelry. I actually had to learn Italian on the fly too, so it was like being dropped into a bucket and then trying to figure out how to swim and make jewelry. But it was wonderful. And when I came back from school, I went full time with jewelry, and haven't looked back since. So originally the company was for kind of just boutique jewelry. It was in the early days of Etsy. It was when I was focusing on jewelry for stores and just stuff that was a little bit more, a little more moody and alternative, big sterling silver chunks. And cause I'm not a very cutesy girl, you know, like kind of a grown up fancy goth, I guess, as I look down at myself in my black and burgundy. So I was making kind of alternative, a little bit rock and roll, a lot of inspired by my travels jewelry for stores. And on the side for fun, I would work with authors or bands that I was just personally a huge fan of and would make pieces with them that they could sell to their fans and raise money maybe for a book tour or, to make a music video, almost like a Kickstarter, but with jewelry helping their fans fund a particular project. And that's how I went from a store, kind of store wholesale boutique focus to a little bit more and more in the merchandise scene. And then only in the last year has Rock Love really exploded on merchandising. It's been amazing because I'm collaborating with the properties themselves. I'm not, you know, pursuing a project and saying like, oh, I'll pay you money to let me make your jewelry. No, we're actually working with the creators or with the consumer products team that helps envision the world and the brand of whatever the property or project is. And so that's been really amazing because I get to work hand in hand with a lot of the creators and the visionaries for these different merch projects. And then my jewelry gets to be, you know, kind of this official exclusive item that feels a little more sincere than just somebody mass producing stuff in China because they want to, you know, make money off fans. So as a fan myself of the projects, I get to make what I want to wear and what I hope fellow fans would really appreciate.
How do you make the jump from like boutique jewelry, alternative style jewelry to like fandom jewelry? I mean, where does that desire start?
I guess I've always been a, you know, a self-proclaimed geek and nerd. So I would be doing fashion-y stuff, you know, like, oh, New York City, the fashion week. You know, that whole scene is very glamour. And I would come home and I'd be like, all right, that's cool. I'm going to just watch some Doctor Who episodes and, you know, make my jewelry while hiding away in my office with reruns of Star Trek. And so... I never really fit into the boutique fashion-y scene, and my respite was going and you know, reading my books or watching my TV shows or playing my video games, and really that was what I was more passionate about anyway. It just never really occurred to me that I could ever do jewelry for these things that I loved. It always seemed like a secondary hobby, as you know, most of us, we love a thing, but we don't really envision being officially affiliated. So I started doing it that way. And it wasn't until Star Trek, CBS reached out to me and had seen some of my jewelry for smaller merch collaborations and asked me if I would be interested in making a premium jewelry line, since I focus on sterling silver, a premium jewelry line for Star Trek. And it was debuted at Comic-Con, New York Comic-Con last year. So we're almost at the exact 1 year anniversary of doing some of these crazy merch projects, because Comic-Con is coming up this week and I'm all in a tizzy. So once Star Trek went well, that and they were lovely. They were really like carte blanche, you know, do whatever you feel. You're a fan, so you know, we'll approve things and suggest things, but you tell us what you want to make. And so I ran with it. And then as soon as that launched, I got to be invited to do all kinds of other projects. So at this point, I've got Star Trek, also CBS's Penny Dreadful, which is an amazing show, and Eva Green is just breathtaking. And then things like Vikings on History Channel. And then I started doing a bunch of the video game scene, which as a gamer nerd myself was not a far cry from stuff I already loved anyway. And so now the combination of that and the video games, I got asked to work with What a Workshop. So jewelry for The Hobbit and a bunch of new projects they have coming out that I'm not even allowed to say yet. So I just have to sit and kind of squee at the excitement. that's coming. So many cool things coming. So it's just been amazing. And there's a lineup all through 2016 of giant projects that I love. And then Outlander, I was approached to do jewelry for potentially Downton Abbey. And they said, you know, Downton Abbey is an option. Outlander is an option. If you've ever heard of that, you know, we just had our season one. And I'm like, whoa. Outlander? So I came in for a meeting for Downton Abbey and left, you know, declaring like, Outlander, yes, please. As a reader of the books, I love Scotland, love travel, love Diana Gabaldon's whole world that she's created. So So that's how Outlander happened. And this small indie boutique jewelry designer ended up doing projects with these amazing companies that are, they don't need me, but they are really embracing independent, handcrafted merchandise. I think everybody's OD'd on junk from China. And so the merch world is really embracing some of us small artisans. And so far, the track record has been good. So people have been asking Rocklove for more collaborations.
So you mentioned your love of fandoms, and you are now on your website. There's a complete as far as what you can share, complete list of projects you've worked on or that at least have been announced. I'm sure you're a fan of a gajillion things. There's no way, even if everyone came to you, you couldn't possibly handle everything. You couldn't say yes to probably everything that if all of your dream things approached you. So coming at it from that angle, how do you select the projects you work on? And you already mentioned that in sometimes, like Star Trek, they will come to you. I'm guessing you probably, especially with more clout as you develop the all of these lines and have these experiences with the fandoms and Rocklove becomes more widely known, you can approach more. So how do you navigate this entire world of fandoms to select the right projects for you?
Well, that one's been a challenge because as somebody who's only really been doing this kind of high profile merchandise for only now coming up on a year, it's it's still an indie company. I have some assistants but we're still here like hand making all the pieces. So really at this point it's my own personal best favorites, I guess, that I can run with. Pretty much all of the clients approach me, which has been, again, just absolutely amazing, because who do you approach if you have a fandom that you love? Like, how do you can't really just Google, like, how do I talk to BBC Doctor Who?
But there should be a way.
So, you know, that's been amazing on its own, because how do you even go about that? But the other big one, besides picking the things that I'm just most in love with, is I stick to mostly sci-fi, fantasy, and history, because that's where my own passions lie. And I think it's really important to bring an understanding and a passion into pieces. So like there have been a few merch ones that people have brought to me and I'm like, oh, I have no idea about that show, or like, I am not a fan of that band. I know that that's like a huge band, but no thank you. The other good one is I've been really fortunate in working with some really flexible and enthusiastic properties, and a lot of them, you know, are under the same studios. So when I know that a studio is really respectful of their artisans and the people making their merch, the ones that have been really, they let me do what I need to do, and they really respect what I suggest, you know, as like, what's the point of hiring a professional jeweler if I make this thing for you, suggest a dollar amount for retail, and then you go and like quadruple the price? Because otherwise, then no one can afford it, and nobody can appreciate it. So I've been really sticking to the studios that have been very. They've really, a few of them have really taken me under their wing and have, you know, fostered and understood that this is a really big change of business for me, and have been so supportive, allowing me to grow and letting me run with the designs that my gut tells me are something that both me as a fan and my fellow fans would appreciate. So hopefully the track record will continue. Everything's been going really well so far. And I'm like a blushing bride, you know, every time a line launches, I'm so nervous and I'm sitting there like shaking and worried that the world is going to erupt and be like, that's crap. What is that? You know, like, please like my stuff, a little bit of heart and soul. So far, everybody's been really receptive. You can't please everybody, and I have to continue to grow a thicker skin there. But as long as I stay sincere with the pieces, and I think it's going really well, and I'll stick to those things that I feel really good about and really love, so that the designs that I produce will be accessible and sensitive to that particular fandom.
So take us on a brief journey of how you either get an inkling or how you're first approached by a studio or a network to the beginning of that relationship and how things are explored to the launch. How would you describe that process?
So right now I've got a few of them that I'm working on, and everybody is different because some of these studios are really litigious and really strict and businessy, and then some of them are a little bit more laid back and confident in the project. It also depends if it's a brand new project. Like Outlander is an older book series with lots of established fans, but the TV series is new. So right now, working with them, Sony is the studio, and there's been a lot of back and forth initially to find what exactly they wanted and be on the same page before we proceeded with designs. And they don't tell me what I have to design, but I want to make sure that we're on the same page before I go forth, going crazy in my sketchbook and then falling in love with something and then finding out I'm not allowed to make it, which did actually happen a couple times. So for example, sometimes there's intermediaries, there's studios will hire companies that do licensed merch and act as the middlemen to help develop relationships with all kinds of different artisans and produce different merch. When you are designing, it goes all the way through, the red tape. And Sony specifically for Outlander, the jewelry that I'm working on is technically Outlander the series. So that at first was a little bit of a challenge, because to create pieces just for Outlander the series on Stars, you really have to separate yourself as a book fan and also look at the TV show with different eyes, not knowing what all is forthcoming. And obviously there are some big differences. And, as the jeweler, the biggest one, of course, is the ring. And I'm like, what? What is that? What? That's not the thistle ring. But also pieces that are already in the show, sometimes they have things that are different for merchandise versus as seen on screen. So I pitched a bunch of designs for Sony, and at first they were rejected because they were very much stuff that I brought from the book. And they were like, oh, no, this is for the series. So I had to come back with round two of just, designs, whatever I felt like would suit. And then those they loved. And that's what we ended up creating. The first five different designs that are on the Outlander stores was my round two after I created stuff that was specifically translated from what I envisioned the book described for some pieces. So we went less literal. It was very much more inspired by Scotland, inspired by this magical world and time that Diana Gabaldon created for the series. So that's why there's much more love for Scotland and the Standing Stones and the romance of the Outlander world in the jewelry pieces that we just launched, rather than anything very literal from the books. So that was the biggest challenge so far, because a lot of the other shows or video games or TV series that I work with, it's usually a little bit more literal. And here we had to go very romantic and very inspirational, because we didn't want to be showing anything from the books that wasn't going to be in the show, that's not a part of the actual series. But I didn't want to lose the love for the books, because that's where I was originally coming from as a reader who was also a fan of the series.
So if you had been given the carte blanche to design jewelry for the book series, what type of pieces might we have seen?
Oh man, so I actually had this. The initial thing that I created was a cloak pin that was from. There's about three or four descriptions of a particular brooch. I don't want to describe it too much because I have hopes that with round two, maybe I can convince the series to let me make it. I'll be like, oh, look, the first round of jewelry was so well received. Can I please make that one piece again now? Please, please. So I designed this cloak pin, and I communicated with Diana Gabaldon, and I, you know, reached out to her and was saying, I'm working with this series for the official jewelry, and, you know, I thought I'd send around some sketches if you had any thoughts, since this is your world, and I'd love any feedback. And so she loved this cloak pin, and then I ended up being rejected by Sony, and then I had to write back to her very sheepishly, say, so about that cloak pin, I was so embarrassed. I was like already so excited to email with her, and here I was like, oh, never mind, I don't get to make this after all, but here's the new sketches. So I hope I have if I had my druthers, I would get to make this cloak pin as the second round, and then I can finalize something that was very much described in the books. But I don't know if it'll be in the show, and maybe if we make it, maybe they will use it in the show. Who knows?
Have any of your pieces that you've designed that have been inspired by the show actually been used on the shows they were created for?
Nothing for Outlander, since this one is new, and usually a show is filmed either 6 months to a year in advance. So a lot of the times I'm working on merchandise that's for fans and sold in the web stores. So there's a few that have been out there. I actually did pieces for True Blood that were on screen, but for most of them, like Star Trek, which is of course already filmed, or The Hobbit, those are all later on. So not in the shows, but a romantic interpretation of something that was in the show, or maybe it's a smaller version of an actual prop. Like for The Hobbit, I did a Black Arrow necklace that is sold on Weta Workshop's website, and it's an exact miniature to scale. We even had a CAD scan, a 3D scan of the real prop, which is, you know, like 6 feet long, and we miniaturized it into a little sterling silver pendant. But of course, that's not seen in the show. So we'll see moving forward. There's certain ones that maybe in advance for like Penny Dreadful or something like Outlander, we could catch up. But usually the web stores or the studios are looking for merchandise that can help translate the world or the fandom as something that us fans can wear and kind of express our love, something a little bit more than just like 80 million t-shirts that are out there. So, and that's where I come in with trying to make something a little bit more premium, adult, grown-up, sterling silver, especially for those of us, like, I have a very severe metal allergy, so I don't get to wear the cute fan tchotchkes. No matter how cute they are, I will turn into a leper. So, it's horrible. Making something that us, you know, adults can wear, because we love our fandoms too, not just teenagers or cosplay.
So on your website, rocklove.com, you have a list of the different franchises that you've worked with or are working with. And on that list, I found one. I mean, they all are fabulous. They're all very impressive. And they're all, like you said, sci-fi fantasy. But one stood out to me because I've enjoyed her books. It's been quite a few years since I've read them. But Jacqueline Carey, how did you become involved with that series or with the author? Especially since it is a book series and not yet, you know, maybe fingers crossed one day, but not yet brought to screen.
Oh my goodness. That would be a gorgeous either TV series or a movie. Oh, like a three-part movie.
It would be so rich. It would be, I mean, I can't even talk about it. Yeah.
Well, so for those who aren't quite sure what we're talking about, it's Jacqueline Carey did the Kushiel Legacy. There's three books in the first series and then an additional three in a separate series that is a slightly different time but same world. So Kashiel's Dart being the first one, which I definitely recommend. Outlander fans would love Jacqueline Carey's work. So that one was one. That one was one that I actually reached out to her. I've worked with Clive Barker, who did the Hellraiser series, and Terry Goodkind, who does the Confessor series, also the TV show Legends of the Seeker. He's got a mountain of publications. So I had already worked with a couple authors that I loved and had run across Jacqueline and pretty much cold called her. It's probably the only real cold call that I've made.
If you're going to make one, you want to make that one. That was pretty stinking awesome.
That was one of the few that, you kind of like have a moment where you're like, well, damn it, I'm going to write her a weird email and she's going to look in her inbox and be like, what? So I wrote to her and I said, I've worked with a few authors and I work with TV shows and movies and whatnot and bands. But what I would really love to do is work with you because your books were such a personally important thing. I started reading your books when I was maybe 15 or 16 and like under the covers, like so my parents wouldn't find out.
You just made me feel so old, Allison.
Sexy in those books. And this was still like 15 years ago.
Still 15 years ago I wasn't 15 or 16.
this was a virginal experience. So I was very shy that I was reading these books, them and Kate Hamilton. I had hidden, like teenage boys have porn, I have hidden Laurel K. Hamilton and Jacqueline Carey like underneath my mattress.
I say thank goodness that those books weren't around when Summer and I, because we're sisters, that Summer and I were in high school, because we would have been doing the same thing. Mine were Harlequin Historicals.
Yeah, and V.C. Andrews.
V.C. Andrews.
We cut our teeth on those.
We did. And so it's so funny to hear you say that, because even though we weren't teens when these were or are popular, again, I had to blame it on Summer. Summer, I think, introduced me to Laurel K. Hamilton.
Yeah, it was me.
I mean, everything.
The only difference between then and now is that now I can proudly put them on my bookshelf and I don't care what anybody thinks.
Right. Now I have this discussion.
Oh, my goodness.
Claiming your own feminine sexuality. Instead, then I was like, ooh, with my flashlight.
But you know what? It's so funny you say that, because you can watch The Wonder Years, which is set in the 60s, and they're doing the same thing with like a flashlight under the cover. The flashlight under the cover hasn't changed in at least 40 years.
Right. And if your mom walks in and sees a little flashlight under the cover, she's only going to think the worst. There's not any kind that somebody's going to walk on
there's
you.
There's no business having a
flashlight. And then be like, oh, there's nothing afoot here. Oh, exactly. Let me just wander on. I'm going to check other children. There's nothing suspicious about the little floating light.
I think that the flashlight may have gone out of style now that they have backlit Kindles and stuff.
Oh, fair.
But I'm sure it's still a lit sheet.
See, then I could have been reading it, on my iPhone and not be so conspicuous. But so anyway, those books, those were a very big catalyst on how I understood just sexuality and strength and feminine, knowing what you want and being okay with it. And the phrase "love as thou wilt" was a big deal. So I wrote to Jacqueline Carey and she was very enthusiastic and looked at my site and was very complimentary of my work. And we decided that together we would make this piece. It was Phaedra's Rose and the main character in the book. And she has this particular tattoo on her back that is so iconic to the series and the character. And so we made this piece translated in sterling silver, and the proceeds for the entire piece went to Jacqueline's public library, who was building a new wing. So not only did I get to work with, one of my very favorite authors, but we raised just between the two of us with just our Facebooks. We didn't get any press. We didn't really like push anything for it, but we made and donated over $12,000 so far to her local library, who was pleased as punch because we just kind of did it. And then we're like, here, have some donations. And you can read more about it on my website under the official merch her link is there in the piece. And so that was really great, because not only were we making a piece for her fans, but her fans were able to really contribute to something that the author they loved also loved. So it was a real connection for everybody involved, because you could order a piece, wear something that only fellow fans would really understand. It's like a little calling card, like, oh, I know what that necklace means. And it's like a secret handshake for fans of the series, but also to really be able to do something for the author and for the author's library. So that was a really special, it was like a bit of a labor of love, since all the proceeds went. So, you know, we just covered the silver costs and that was it. Which is why I don't normally reach out, because I wouldn't be able to afford to do stuff like that. It was something that if we had sold a bajillion of those, I don't know what I would do. My fingers would fall off and I'd be, but that one was, it was a really nice one. And now, to work, with another series that I love, you know, Diana Gabaldon's Outlander series has been really exciting. I think at this point I just have to hit up Laurel K. Hamilton. I'll have the triumvirate of authors.
Oh my gosh, that would be, you know, okay. The thing about Laurel K. Hamilton is there's the, of course, Anita Blake and Mary Gentry. Have you read the Mary Gentry?
I've read all of them. I definitely Anita Blake for me was all kinds of badass, because she wore lots of black thread and kicked butt and like didn't care.
But at some point, she's going to be omnipotent, and I'm like, every book that I read of the Anita Blake, she gets one more power and one more power. And I'm like, at what point is she just a god?
Exactly.
It's true. And then she does something naughty with one more brand of lycanthrope, and you're like, what is there? Is there a Shibu Inu,
a were penguin, surely.
Were penguin. Were polar bear.
Oh, a were penguin. I just thought that's kind of wrong.
Okay. A were gecko.
A were gecko. Oh no! If you're gonna do that, do a were chameleon, because at least you can change.
I was a little old for the series, but I definitely read Animorphs. It starts to go into that.
Okay, I want you to know that I only know of this series because I was at the passport office yesterday, and somebody had donated the entire series to this passport office, and I was sitting in a chair, and there was an Animorphs book next to me. And I was what is that? And it was the weirdest looking book I've ever seen. But
those are for much younger. That and like Goosebumps.
Yeah. I do remember Goosebumps.
Yes, that was a '90s kids series thing, and kind of a non-sexy version.
Yeah. No, weird thing. I hope not. I mean, I hope it's not too sexy.
The picture on the cover was not sexy. It was not sexy at all. It was like, it looked like a shriveled old man with like long, creepy hair, and it was like the elitist or elitist or something. I don't know. Not
sexy. So back to this actual sexy.
Yes.
To Outlander. How did you first discover the books?
Oh, I was trying to figure this out. My bestie childhood friend Amanda, I think, directed me to them, which is funny because I think it was her sister that ended up directing me towards the Kashiel books by Jacqueline Carey. They were like my sister and older sister, so I got a lot of literary influence from them. And I think that's how. So high school was when I first read Outlander, and then I read the first three books. And this, of course, was when you had to go to the library and get your books. There was no Kindle or Amazon Prime or any of that kind of stuff. So it was a little bit harder to get your hands on a book, or you had to go to the bookstore and buy the book or borrow the book. And so it was a lot of that. It was a lot of lending around the books. I know that once I read most of these books, they ended up getting passed on to be tucked under somebody else's mattress, probably.
you must have some lumpy mattress, because
there was a lot of reading going on. I was a pretty voracious reader, and especially if it had powerful women that had sexy conquests, which is embarrassing to admit.
and a current that was not on my list when I was 16.
Hey, it fueled my love for reading and made me start reading at
that's
a young
the
age.
Thing.
So if nothing else,
there has to be something. I mean, it doesn't have to be what mine was. When I was very young, like in elementary school, you don't really have assigned books to take home, but you have reading in class, and hopefully your family life is such, or your time outside of school is such that you have some kind of resource, a library, you know, parents or friends, whatever it is, to have access to books, because no matter what the subject matter, of course, reading is just good for 100% everything.
It's fundamental.
Right.
It is. So a lot of people read when they're extremely young, or they find a series that kind of hooks them, and then once you find whatever that is, it doesn't really matter. They're like, they're gone. They're like readers for life. Well, for me, it was a little bit, I consider it late, although I guess it's not that late compared to some others. For me, my hook in sixth grade, so I would have been 11, was Flowers in the Attic.
Ooh, I'm trying to remember that sounds familiar.
It's V.C. Andrews, which means there's
and a very
brothers and sisters who are getting it on. That's all you need to know about V.C. Andrews.
Basically, she always has some kind of incest going on. But I didn't
creepy,
know this.
Creepy
and
swamp incest.
And my poor dad, I'd be like, forget how I found the first one, but they were in the drugstore, basically. Or we would go shopping, and I would see the next one, and I would say, oh, Daddy, can you give me this? He's like, oh, okay. So we take it, and we go home. My poor dad had no idea what he was buying me.
Oh, my gosh.
And this was so not for an 11-year-old. Oh, my gosh. So, yeah, I started that. But the good thing is, although maybe the subject matter wasn't the best, the good thing is it hooked me.
Right.
And I have been a voracious reader ever since.
Yeah. Yeah. It I mean, a lot of times it's before your time, especially reading orgies between werewolves and vampires and things when you're 15 and virginal. You're like, oh, well, this is what sex is like. I can't wait.
Right. Allison's just going to lay it out there, y'all. She's outing us all as readers of this kind of stuff.
Were orgies.
So I my poor first boyfriend, I'm sure he's uncertain why I was not totally enthusiastic. This is it. Where's your 8-foot long hair that drapes all over me? This is what Laurel K. Hamilton says happens. But I did go away with the, that's right. Very serious jewelry business person talk. But yeah, I think in anything that hooks you and also has a strong message, because amongst the sexy chapters, they're in all of, well, I don't know about Flowers in the Attic, but the other books all had very strong messages for the personal conviction of the main character, the woman. Then she was always doing what her heart said and following her own passions and what she needed to do despite the naysayers. And I think when it all boils down past the little sexy titillating chapters, the messages are all the same. And that's what is most important, because no matter what age you are, if you're in puberty and you internalize this message, or if you're an adult woman and you're now coming to these messages, they're always important. And they always make a huge difference in how you live your life. So that's the thing that I really took away from these books past the phrase that good sex is messy and good sex, or really good sex is even messier. Sex is messy. Good sex is even messier. I think that was the other takeaway from my teenage reading.
You're like, poor boyfriend. This isn't messy enough. This is wrong.
My first boyfriend did look like a vampire. He'll never hear this because I don't keep in touch with him. So I can say that. Yeah, that part was probably a little bit influenced too.
So on to the amazing Outlander stuff that you've created. You have currently 5 pieces, right?
Right. We have 5 pieces. They're all solid sterling silver, which I handcraft here in, I'm located in New York City. And my personal favorite, kind of the pendant that I think most represents the little capsule collection, is the Craig Nadun pendant, which has a giant blue sandstone gemstone in the center, which has little flecks. It's this deep blue color and little flecks that look like a starry night sky, and it's surrounded by kind of a bird's eye view of the standing stone circle. And then on the reverse, there's a cutout so you can see the sparkly gem through of a Lucan booth, which is a Scottish lover symbol. And then it says, "People disappear all the time," engraved around the outside of the back. And that was kind of my nod to the books, since that's, of course, the first sentence in the prologue of Outlander. But they also say it in the intro to the series. So it kind of ties in the magic of Scotland, the magic of Diana's world that she created for us for Outlander, and then has the nods to both book and series for fans of either or both. So that's my personal favorite, the Craignadun. And then there's also the crown thistle necklace is the logo of the series, but also the logo of the series is the thistle and crown of the Outlander book cover. And then the back says Sassenach on it, because I had to throw that in. I like to put things on the back of jewelry so that it's not just, you know, the required legal line that licensed stuff needs. And then there's a third, which was really just kind of inspired by, and I was very happy that that I was green-lighted to make it, because it's an Album O'Cree is the necklace name, and there's a little pair of matching earrings. And so there's a standing stone, kind of hammered, textured, rectangle charm that says Album O'Cree, which is Scotland, my heart. And with it is a little Lucan Booth charm that is, again, the thistle from the book covers, and then a real Scottish sea pebble. So I have this poor woman in Scotland who is actually collecting these pebbles by the seashore and sends them to me, and every single one is really a little piece of Scotland, and they're each different colors of, you know, we'll roughly choose the same shape, but all different colors. So yours is truly unique. And it's this little bundle of charms. And I'm really proud of that one, because when you're given just an open forum of make something inspired by Outlander, but it can't be something literal on the show and it can't be something literal in the books, you know, you get pretty limited right away. And I wanted to make something that really was the magic of Scotland and Gaelic culture. And so the little bit of Scots Gaelic in the Mo'Cree, and the little Scottish sea pebble in case you wanted to transport to Jacobite Scotland. I'm definitely curious. I wrote in the intro, I was like, does not guarantee to drop you into Jamie Fraser's lap, but hopefully somebody can transport and then bring it back for us.
So what kind of specifications did you give this poor woman in Scotland with regards to picking up these sea pebbles?
I feel like I didn't tell her initially what it was for, because I didn't want it to be rejected and then disappoint her, you know, in any way, just any way kind of out what I was doing. And get anybody excited or invested, and then be like, oh, sorry, it's not going to work. Nobody liked it. So currently, I only just recently sent her the link because the jewelry only just launched. So now she's excited. But beforehand, I was just like, would you mind? Like, I see that you are in Scotland and make pebble jewelry. Could I buy some pebbles, but without anything attached to them? Because I would like to put them as a charm on a piece with other little charms that I'm casting. And she was like, oh, okay, sure. I can sell you some pebbles without anything attached to them. Yeah, I think she probably thought that I was just like a random crafty person. And now I'm like, may I have lots of pebbles? There's not going to be any part of her seashore left if this piece goes well. So real sea pebbles that wash up on the bonny shores of Scotland, and a poor woman who's collecting them for us that will hopefully still be happy to collect them if the piece goes really well. And then I'm like, I have hundreds of pebbles.
You should source them from different shores, and then you could be like, would you like the northern shore pendant, or would you like the eastern shore?
It'll be like Scotch. You're like, oh, I like this lowland pendant, but the Islay, the peach of the highland is... Oh my goodness. Well, so I'm hopefully going to Scotland in April, and depending on what's doing, so I might have to go try and collect some of my own pebbles. They have to be seaside, so that they have the nice kind of polished, smooth texture. So I'll have to go to a shore and see if I can collect my own. But absolutely, I'll do a Scotch and pebble tour.
Well, you know, at least the three sides of Scotland are shore. And then there's so many islands that there's so much shore to choose from.
And then I'll have to have it'll be a range of pricing for, oh, this is the more difficult to find good pebble shore. Because it has to be a charm size so that you're not wearing, you know, like a boulder from...
I had to take a boat to get to this pebble, and the people on the island only spoke Gaelic, so I had a really hard time procuring said pebble. So
that's
this one's much more expensive.
I'll be sure to video my interpretive dance of kneading pebbles.
The pebble dance.
That's right. So April is April is hopefully the Scotland trip, and then I will. I'll see about collecting my own pebbles and give this poor woman a break. Then everybody can have a little bit of Scotland, no matter where you are, and make your wish to go visit Jamie.
Well, back to your Creneda necklace. I'm not going to lie. And I found it beautiful from the first time I saw it and intriguing. It looked like a night sky, right? Mm-hmm. But I didn't know until you mentioned it that it was surrounded by standing stones. That's what a beautiful idea.
Thank you. I'm really happy with that one too, because I had a bunch of sketches first of more straight on standing stones. I knew that's such an important image for me, at least as a fan of the series. It holds the most magic for the books, and so finding a way to translate that without it looking kind of front on literal was challenging. And the intro of the series is just so gorgeous. I wanted to put that in a piece somehow. So really that the Creneda pendant, the most specific inspiration for it was that the TV series intro with the gorgeous song, the gorgeous ceremony with everybody holding the lanterns, and I'm really happy that people seem to be responding to that piece.
So when you have all of your like 5 minutes a day or 5 minutes a week that you aren't sleeping or making jewelry, we know you're consumed by this because it's a passion, but it's also what you do. What are some of your interests outside of jewelry design?
Well, mostly I would say that I read. I haven't been doing as much with violin, even though that was what I, started out thinking would be my career. But when I was much younger, I did a lot in the Renaissance Fair, reenacting since I was a little preteen in the Renaissance Fair, because my parents also would perform in it. And so I would, I would be like a street busker, little teenage gypsy violinist, belly dancer. So I still like a lot of history, and every once in a while I get to go off to Pensac War or one of the Renaissance fairs. So if it's not something history related or kind of Ren Fair scene related, then I'm usually reading or watching one of my very many fandoms on Netflix or Hulu. A lot of reading. Lately I'm shameful to say that I'll read for like 5 minutes and then I'll fall asleep, because this year has been so crazy. And especially right now, as I prep for Comic-Con, there's a pile of books I'm looking at. There's a pile of books in my office staring at me kind of accusingly, like, read me. And I'm like, I'm so tired. So usually it's reading. And then there's a couple of series that I'm an uber fan of that I'm always trying to keep on top of.
So you mentioned New York Comic Con. What will you be doing there? Will you have a booth?
Yes, I realize that this is probably going to be live after the con, so hopefully you guys have come and seen me. But I will have a booth, and I get to debut a small inventory of various pieces, both Rocklove pieces. So like the Aurora collection is my most recent series for myself, for Rocklove. And I'll have pieces from some of the latest video games, and I will have Outlander there, the five new designs. And I don't normally do a lot of shows, but this one is always great because I get to really hear feedback, and that's always helpful too, because if somebody says, I love your stuff, but I need it in this size, or I really wish you made that, it's always very helpful because I'm right there to say, oh, that's an excellent idea. Thank you. Comic-Con, and then it's the holidays, and I don't emerge until January when I look all pale and decrepit, and I claw my way out of a jewelry hole and then go find a beach somewhere with lots of cocktails. So that's what's on my plate, and I cannot wait too, because there are multiple things that are launching that I don't get to talk about yet for fear of the wrath of the legalities of the studios. But if you keep an eye on the Rocklove website, the www.rocklove.com, I'll be posting more in the coming soon, and more as different collaborations launch. And there are a few of them coming out for the holidays, and working on a bunch of new pieces for 2016 too. And my latest thing is making things do things. So things that spin and things that come apart and things that like possibly even light up. Ooh. So that's what's on my horizon. My desk is just littered with pieces. I've got Star Trek 2015, or 2016, I'm sorry, is the 50-year anniversary of Star Trek. So I'm doing some really premium pieces for them that are in gold and gemstones and super luxury. And I like looking at my desk. Like, I don't get to talk about this or that. I just, it's hard. I want to shout from the rooftop some of these cool projects, and I'm not allowed to, which is very frustrating and very boring for social media.
Well, speaking of social media, you've shared your website with us. How might our listeners get a hold of you or find you?
I am attached at the hip to email. So any questions, you can email at info@rocklove.com. The website, rocklove.com. And then I have Facebook, which is facebook.com/rocklovefanpage, which I had to make because back when there were no fan pages was when I started that, before fan pages and business pages and whatnot. And then I do every once in a while post behind the scenes to the Facebook or Instagram, which is @rocklovejewelry. And as I'm allowed to leak things, once we get that permission, then I start to post some behind the scenes or of upcoming pieces or pieces that have just freshly launched. And hopefully the Outlander pieces will do well over the holidays. So I will be asked to work on a round two for the coming months of next year.
From your lips to God's ears, we want nothing more than to see all the books brought to screen, as well as for you to have a minimum one line per season. That would be amazing.
That would be delicious. I have so many ideas, and there's so much potential because there's such travel in the book series. And, you know, there's a possibility for such a long and fruitful, you know, series because there's so many books. I really just want to make my cloak pin.
Oh my gosh. And we want you to.
I mean, I'll go buy a cloak to put it on.
Right. I know. It's cape weather. It's anytime there's a snap in the air, I get very excited because then I get to come pull out all of the like flowy cardigans and wraps. And I think I think if that brooch doesn't get approved, I might have to just make it for myself, but not with any of the Outlander names or licensing, and just make a generic cloak pin that happens to look a little something like something in the book.
As long as you can get it done, I think people would fall in love. I think people would fall in love with it.
That it would have to be my new cold call email. Like, dear Diana, so cloak pin I showed you, let's do it anyway. It just won't be under the brand name. It'll be a Rockliffe piece, Rockliffe cloak pin.
I was just looking at your Twitter feed. You mentioned the Aurora collection. Is that the one with the labradorite that you've got here?
Yeah.
That is gorgeous.
Thank you. I love labradorite. I went up to Northwest Territories in Yellowknife and then a little bit above, so right below the Arctic Circle. And that's where I did a lot of research for. There's the Aurora collection. There's also a part of a series called Northbound. There's Northbound bracelets, which have a lot of Inuit influence. And then there's more to come, but a lot of focus on the Aurora Borealis, which we saw every night and was just stunning.
That's on my bucket list, preferably in Scotland, but I almost don't care. I just want to see it.
I'm glad that I crossed it off. And now anytime people are like, oh, it's cold outside, I'm like, nah, it's not -35 degrees cold. Like, I've got awesome. All the gear, a little bit of snowfall in New York City. I'm like, oh yes, time for my, you know, -35 rated snow boots. I pull out all the gear. So it gave me perspective for cold weather now.
Well, Allison, thank you so much for spending some of your, we know you're extremely busy. We know you have all of these projects going on and you're balancing everything. And so thank you so much for spending your time with us. We really, really, really appreciate it.
No, thank you so much. It's wonderful to get to talk about the pieces because so frequently, you know, they're put on websites, but it's unusual for a fandom to approach an independent artist, a small crafter. So it's really great to be able to talk about it and kind of give a voice, I guess, a voice to my inspirations and just my sheer enthusiasm for getting to work with something that I'm a fan of.
Well, we are also fans, so we completely understand how we feel blessed to be able to do. I mean, yes, we chose to do it, but it's not our job. But we do feel blessed to even have this podcast and to have other fans that would even listen. When we started, we were like, okay, well, be happy if our parents listened and that's it. So we completely understand. It's a labor of love for us. And we know that you are a super fan as well.
Well, thank you for having me, and I look forward to hearing my own voice on the podcast. That's nerve-wracking.
Well, thank you so much, and have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you, Ginger and Summer. Have a good one.
Wasn't that a hoot?
That was a hoot, and I'm not kidding. Her jewelry is amazing.
I want that standing stone circle with the blue sky and... On the back is that the one where it says people disappear all the time?
Yeah, the sandstone
one. That's the one I want.
I do, and I know we weren't really talking about non-Outlander jewelry, but I'm in love with anything with labradorite on it, and her Aurora.
Oh my gosh, the way it's just changed moved. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I want to check out more of that inspired jewelry for the Jacqueline Carey novels, the Cushiel. Oh my gosh, yeah, I love that. So yeah, those are definite recommendations for myself. And Summer, I think... I'll give as good as I get because you introduced me to Outlander and I'm suggesting for you, Jacqueline Carey.
I'm not going to podcast about it.
No.
Okay. I'm like, never, no more podcasts.
Never in a day.
And for those of you that got to go to Comic-Con, New York Comic-Con last weekend, I hope you got to stop by her booth and look at the stuff on my behalf because I really wanted to be there.
She put a few photos from her booth on Instagram, and she tweeted them. And I think we shared, I think, at least one on our Instagram feed as well. But yeah, it was so, so beautiful. And obviously, we know that we can't go everywhere or be everywhere. So it's always tough not to be able to go to places like New York Comic Con. But we're so happy and of course, willing to share anything that like that, that to pass it on or to retweet, etc., to post, that we can get to help support artists, especially the licensees, to get their name out there and help Outlander fans hear more about the stuff that's being made truly just for them.
Well, it's true, because the more we support them, the more stuff they'll get to make, which makes it so much more exciting, because y'all, this is just the beginning. This was just one season. You'll just have to wait and see what's to come. I'm sure it's going to be amazing.
And with that, I think we can wrap up this episode, episode 115. Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous audio host, audioboom.com. Our Audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/Outlander Pod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at Outlander Pod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Outlander Pod, or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.